welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 211 of the podcast. And it is the 4th of March 2015 as I record this. So today I have a discussion with Jim Kukroll, and I say it's a discussion, it's not so much an interview as a chat between us. And we're talking about the difference between marketing and sales and how they are related. Because I had a bit of a epiphany about this. We spend so much time doing marketing when what we really want is sales. So that's interesting. And we talk about the sales funnel and get into also what we think is coming for the industry for books and games and more. And so we have quite a wide ranging and fun chat. And I love talking to Jim because he has quite a different perspective to me. He thinks in a different way to I think, even though, you know, we agree on a lot of stuff, I always get a lot out of our discussions because I think we have quite different brains. So that's cool. Hope you will enjoy that. That is coming up. I also wanted to mention David Cochrane's latest blog post, which demonstrates that Barnes & Noble Nook is now using Author Solutions for their print-on-demand services. And it's a very revealing post that you should definitely check out, and I'll link to that in the show notes. It's really difficult to know what to do about that. A lot of people immediately wanted to pull their books off Nook Press if you go direct, which I do, and go through a different service like Smashwords or Drafter Digital or one of the others, because of data sharing and stuff like that. But David says, you know, don't react too swiftly. This is still kind of ongoing. So it's an interesting post. Definitely go and look at that. And the next couple of weeks are also exciting for me. I turn 40. Da, da, da. And no doubt I will be writing something deep and meaningful about that. And I'm also heading to Charleston for PubSense Summit, which looks excellent. And if you are anywhere near Charleston, South Carolina, you can check out pubsensesummit.com. And once I get back from that, it will almost be time for London Book Fair. So it's really busy. The next month is crazy busy. And of course, I must get on with some writing, lots of things to write. More and more things to write, it seems. Every day I come up with new ideas and like have to stop myself. Goodness, writing takes the time, doesn't it? The ideas are really, you know, they say ideas are nothing and execution is everything. It's so true. Okay, so other update, because you guys do keep me accountable. One Day in New York is on pre-order. All the files are finished, done, print file with my formatter. So it's funny, like, you know, it almost feels like it's finished and out the door and it's not even for sale yet. It goes live on March 13th. And I can now focus on Deviance, which now has a few thousand words, not too many thousand. But the first few thousand words are done. The first scene is written. The first body has been found. So the book is officially started. I just have to see what happens next, which is the classic next question for fiction writing. And I'm deep into the research, loving the history of Southwark in London, and yeah, really enjoying the medieval red light district as such. So that's good. That's super fun. And yesterday I finished recording the pro files for Business for Authors and finished editing, and it's currently being mastered into the suitable ACX files, and then it will be published as an audiobook. And of course, if you bought the previous audio version from me, I will be contacting you with some promo codes if you would like the next version as such. And of course, if you bought the ebook, you'll be able to get the WhisperSync audiobook for pretty cheap. So I'm hoping it will make everybody happy. And it's certainly been an experience recording it. And I will be writing a blog post about that at some point and talking about it on here when it's available. It's been a lot harder than I expected, given that I am a podcaster. And also, yeah, the audio recording has started for Gates of Hell, which is even more weird because that feels like it was ages ago, but actually it was only published on January the 5th. So that was only like 8 weeks ago that book was published. I really can't imagine what it must be like if you finish a book and then you query agents and publishers and it takes like 2 years to get on the shelf. You must have forgotten the whole thing, which is funny because also in saying that, I met with a really super agent today and we will see where that goes. I'm definitely looking to, you know, do more hybrid stuff and also look at film and TV rights, which is something I definitely want to exploit. And you know, I've talked about gaming and about all kinds of other stuff. So I realise that as an independent author, as the CEO of my global media empire, it would help me to have somebody else who could look into other opportunities. And so anyway, there's nothing to report. But of course, I will let you know if anything should happen. But certainly, I'm trying not to be too excited, but who knows? Right, moving on. This podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and of course, a brilliant book cover will help you stand out in the market, or indeed an audiobook cover for ACX, which needs to be square, but the same kind of design. And if you use 99 Designs, you can also get matching logos, website design, merchandise, and I have thought about t-shirts actually and mugs. I would like to do a range of creative mugs, and you know, other things that will help get your work out there. And the other thing to remember is you can always change your book cover. It's one of the most effective ways to rebrand your work. Now, I've changed my own book covers a number of times and will definitely, no doubt, be doing it again in the future. It's just a sensible thing to do, to update your branding and your covers over time. And of course, there's no risk with 99 Designs, as you only pay when you're happy with what is created and you get lots of choice with multiple designers submitting work. And you can get a power pack upgrade, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed with bold headers, highlighted background and featured listing by going to 99designs.com/Joanna. J-O-A-N-N-A. That's 99designs.com/Joanna to get that power pack upgrade worth $99, which is cool. And I've used 99 Designs myself for a custom illustration of the key to the Gates of Hell, which features on the cover and inside the print book. And it looks stunning, and also drove the description within the book. So if you do illustration, if you have books that need illustration, it's very cool to kind of borrow some design brains. And I actually did that during the writing process. So that was super fun. Okay, so that's 99designs.com/Joanna. Right, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily supported by you guys. So thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And a big thanks to new supporters, Shane McConnell, Thierry Labrosse, Lee Warren, and Gillian Hamilton. Thanks so much to you guys and to everyone supporting on Patreon. And if you would like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen, with a double N. And you can support with just, you know, even a dollar per show to a maximum of 2 shows per month. So $2 a month, if you like, or as much as you like. So thank you so much to everyone supporting the show. And of course, you can always buy my books as well. All right, let's get on with the chat with Jim Cookrell. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, Joanna?
Hey, great to have you back on the show. So just as a little introduction to people who might not know Jim, Jim is an author, professional speaker and consultant at the Author Marketing Institute. And he's also the co-host of the brilliant Sell More Book Show with Brian Cohen, which is one of my must listens, actually, Jim.
Thank you.
I know, and it's actually you filled a good niche there. It's a good, you know, marketing focused show, and it definitely means I never have to mention anything around the news because you guys do it.
Well, that's a good lesson, you know, in finding something in the marketplace. If you're trying to do something, you know, we looked at what wasn't happening in the podcast space, and we said, well, here's what we're going to do that's different. So that's a good way to break into a crowded market.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's only so much space on one's listening schedule for audio. Exactly. So, you know, you have to get your niche, which you guys did. Brilliant. So we are, because I've had you on the show before, we're going to go for some specific questions today, because I had a bit of an epiphany, and I know you'll laugh because you know this stuff. But I had a bit of an epiphany that marketing is not the same as sales. And I think some people get confused about this. So I wondered if we could start by, can you explain the difference and the relationship between these two things?
So this is in regards to selling anything or marketing for anything, but in a book context, you know, I mean, marketing is everything you do to reach and persuade prospects, right? Or readers, okay? Sales is everything you do to close the sale, right? So marketing is the communication that you're doing to warm up a lead, right? So getting a person interested in you and the contents of your books is all the marketing that you do, the communication, the conversation that you're having with those people. And then sales are those tactics at the end where you're getting somebody to actually click the button. Now, Amazon's the best in the world at this, right? Because they have the great call to action buttons and they do the great testing and all that stuff. And you need to be great at that as well as an indie author, because you're going to have to start thinking about putting calls to actions in your books and writing your blurbs the right way and using social proof. So they're the same. They're totally related, but they're totally different. You're right.
Yeah. And because I feel like what's happening is a lot of people are focusing. I mean, for example, I've had a question recently, which is, oh, my goodness, I have all of these websites and blogs and I've started this thing and I've done this thing. And what shall I do? And the question I keep coming back to, and I've had this myself because I'm just as guilty. What is the point of everything that we do? What are some examples of what is marketing and what is sales?
Well, here's the alternative, right? Everybody always doesn't, people don't want to do the marketing and the sales, right? Because in the old days, you know, how it worked was you got your book in a bookstore, hopefully, and people came in and bought it, and the other people did the marketing for you. And there's this huge objection that a lot of authors still have with that concept of that they have to do it themselves, right? And once you get over that, you realize that you have to become an authorpreneur, and you have to go out there and do these marketing things, right? Your great blurbs and selling direct and doing all these things you need to do. You can't not do it. If you don't do it, you're not going to have much of a chance of success. And the beautiful thing about this industry where we are right now is we all have that opportunity, right? So get that romantic dream out of your head about how it used to work, where, you know, you just wrote a check to a Yellow Page ad here in the United States and people would just find your listing and then call you on the phone, right? It doesn't work like that anymore. You have to have conversations with potential readers. You have to build your brand as an author, because people buy from people they know, like, and trust, right? And that's the determining factor of why someone's going to choose to download your book. It's not just the cover, which is a marketing tactic. It's not just the blur, which is a marketing tactic. It's that conversation that you're having with people and creating content like this, or content in blogs or free books or whatever it is going to create that conversation with people and help you build those true fans.
So that's interesting. For example, you just said they're free books. Free books are marketing, not sales. Would you agree?
Well, yes. So sales, I consider sales like a landing page, right? A call to action, download now button, right? I consider that. I consider marketing the tactics to get somebody to that point. right? So you have the sales funnel, right? So classic sales, you have a sales funnel, and then you want to lead somebody down to the bottom of the funnel based upon all these marketing things you do. You get them in the funnel, and at the end, you're at the closing stage where the sale happens. If you were in someone's office trying to get a contract, you hand them a pen, right? You say, hey, here's a pen. Are you ready to buy, right? That's the sale part of it. So they're the same, but they're different.
Okay, well, then I want to take it a step further. I'm in my head, I equate sales with revenue.
Yep.
So if it doesn't create revenue, it's marketing. So for example, this podcast, it may be that at some point, somebody listening may give either you or I money in some form. But what we're essentially doing right now is marketing. Yes.
It's the conversation we're having with each other that is being broadcast out as a content marketing piece and building the brand of ourselves to people may say, oh, I saw Jim on this podcast. I saw Joanna did this podcast and it was helpful to me, right? The whole premise of content marketing is to create content that is valuable and helpful to another person in exchange for that person giving you the trust and then hopefully that sale down the road.
Absolutely. So where I feel that often I've gone wrong and I know other authors have gone wrong is spending. Okay, so say we only have X amount of time. Well, we all do have X amount of time a week. We have to get some balance between what is marketing and what is actually sales. So, for example, one of the most hated jobs of an author is writing the blurb. Or is, you know, that's awful work. It's terrible. And yet one should do that. And I think that actually, and I've recently thought I should redo my descriptions. And that to me is like a salesy piece of work.
Yes.
As opposed to marketing, but it's a must do. So do you think people have forgotten about the sale and have got too much into like Facebook and Instagram and blah, blah, blah?
Yes. And that's one of the biggest flaws I see with most author pages, whether it's on Amazon or Kobo or Barnes & Noble or Smashwords, right? Here's the problem. You're not a sales copywriter. Sales copywriters is a special skill. And there are people who make $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 just to write a one-page sales letter. You know why? Because they use the right words and the right social proof and the right actions in those words to help convince somebody that they need this product or service. And again, number one, you're not a sales copywriter. You wrote a book on architecture or romance, right? So you're not a sales writer, you're a romance writer. Number two, you don't have the expertise or skills to build that. And you may not have a lot of money to pay somebody to write great sales copy. I struggle with writing sales copy, and I've been writing copy for 20 years. So hard to do. But what I suggest you do is go look at other books that are doing a really good job at it and look and take some of the pieces and things of what they're doing in their blurbs and build those in. A great one I've seen is where people say, you know, over 30,000 people who love romance have read this book, right? You can even make that five if you've only sold 500 copies. Over 500 people who love vampire books love this vampire book. You know, that's a great sales copy line. That's a great social proof piece built right into your sales copy. And a lot of people don't want to do this kind of stuff because it feels sleazy to them, right? Because I'm an artist, right? I wrote a book or I've created a song or whatever it is. But the truth is in the sales piece of all this, you have to be able to do those types of things because at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to is people – you build trust in them and they're ready to click the button and they need that little psychological push in their brain to get them to get the sale.
And you mentioned social proof, which is an important part of any kind of sales process. Maybe you could explain what social proof is in the context of authors.
Social proof is the best way to explain it is this. Let's say you were out at a city and you wanted to go have dinner. And you're walking down the street, and there's two restaurants right across from each other. The first restaurant you walked up to has no wait. You could walk right in and eat. And you're like, I'm really hungry. I want to go eat. But before you walk in that restaurant, you looked across the street. There's a line of people, 50 people deep. And they're all waiting to eat at that restaurant. And in your brain, you say to yourself, I wonder why there's 50 people waiting to eat there. That place must be good. That's a perfect example of social proof. If everyone else is dying to get in there and wants to be part of that, it must be amazing. And that is a psychological sales trigger that goes off in a person's head when they make any type of decision, whether to purchase anything online, whether it's consulting or books or anything, right? So social proof is very important. So when you're first starting out, getting those reviews is part of that social proof. That's all reviews are, is social proof. But writing it specifically into your blurb is a great way to do that. To say, look, over 150 people in the last 30 days have downloaded this book and given 4-star reviews. In a customer's mind, they're like, okay, other people who are like me must like it. This must be something I want to spend time and invest in.
And I guess another, we mentioned the free book, and the principle of reciprocity is something that people talk about in, you know, influence, Cialdini's influence and other things. So because again, I've been having arguments about the free book, you know, giveaway thing, and is that a bad idea? Which clearly it's not. But so that reciprocity, the giving effect, what are the other good reasons for doing a free book?
Well, the free book is just such an amazing way now for you to get entry into a whole new market, right? There are millions of people out there looking to download free books. I mean, I always say to people, what do you want the alternative to be? Like before, where there was zero chance of you getting discovered, right? Big deal. You have to give away a free book in a hope that you're going to get somebody to go, that was a great book. And now they're going to go download the rest of your catalog. I mean, this is an amazing way to get new people interested in your brand. There's so much competition. It's getting worse every single day on Amazon and all the other sites. There's so many books. And besides the blurb and the cover and the price and all those other things, how are you going to convince somebody to make the time and investment to do that? Now, content marketing is a great way to do that. Building that trust, building that like, right? And that's one of the reasons. But a free book is still such a great tactic, and it's been proven by very successful authors that is an amazing way to build the platform and get readers.
Yeah, and you also mentioned the going to a supermarket and there's somebody standing there with a whole load of cheese, and right. you try a bit of the cheese, and that doesn't devalue the cheese.
No, that was the question we talked about on the show. Is, I mean, the value of your book is not devalued because you're giving it away free. It's part of a marketing tactic. Right? Exactly. If you go into a grocery store and they give away something to eat, and you eat it and it's good, you're going, well, where do I buy it? It's the same exact concept when it comes to a book.
So I actually met a marketing guy at a publishing conference, and this was one of the things that convinced me that I just can't talk to them anymore. And this marketing guy, you know, when I asked him about sale, how they measure the success of marketing in terms of sales, and he said, well, they're not related. They don't measure the success of marketing in sales. And that totally blew me away, because I'm like, well, how else do you get the money to spend on marketing unless it's like from sales?
That sounds like a PR person.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, getting specific, I have been challenging myself to try and measure the impact of my marketing on sales, and to try and, because again, this time issue, Facebook is my big thing. Okay. So I love Twitter. I don't like Facebook. So can I justify leaving Facebook, as a marketing funnel?
I don't think so.
Oh, really?
No. You know, Facebook, all these social media tools, they might be different for different authors. I have found that absolutely private Facebook groups are a better way to do it than opposed to just hoping to reach all these people in your timeline, right? I just think that's an error, because Facebook's not showing your content to everybody. However, once you bring everybody into your private group, it's almost a captive audience. And now they're seeing the updates in the group. They're getting notified more often. And then what you try to do is, it's a marketing tactic, and then you try to drive those people out into your email list where you can communicate with them directly one-on-one. So I think Facebook is a great way to do it if, number one, you're buying ads, right? Mm-hmm. And for if you're trying to drive people directly to your Amazon page via Facebook, it's going to fail. I've done a lot of testing on that. However, if you're trying to give away a free copy of a book and get somebody on your email list, that's an absolutely great way to use Facebook ads. And then maybe having those private groups. So those are the two things, ads and Facebook groups, that I think work really well in Facebook.
Okay, so there's an example that's worked for you. So I just think it's a very interesting question for people to ask at this point, where, as you said, things are quite busy. You know, if an author tried to do everything that you guys cover on the Selma Book Show every week, it just wouldn't work. I mean, people are going a little bit crazy. And I know, what's that guy, Mark Schaefer, calls it content shock or something. And I think people have got this sort of, oh my goodness, what do I spend my time on? I mean, you obviously like Facebook. I love Twitter. I definitely can see people buying my books because of Twitter. But is there a way for people to measure the success of marketing?
Yeah, you measure it and you get the sales funnel. Look up on Google the sales funnel, right? And you'll see what your goal is. Every author needs to have this sales funnel, which is driving people into the top of the funnel through Facebook, Twitter, whatever else, right?
Free books,
whatever. Yeah. And then they in the sales funnel, they're learning more about you. You're giving them more content. And then they get down to the bottom point where it's like, okay, now buy the book, right? And that's the end of the sales funnel. They're either going to buy it or they don't. And you're building people into the email list and all that stuff. And you have to think in those terms. And Facebook might work great for some people, some authors, and Twitter might work better for some authors. I don't like Twitter anymore. I don't think Twitter works for me at all. But Facebook is actually working very well for me, right? Maybe LinkedIn, if you're writing nonfiction books, is an even better place to be. Mm-hmm. So to your question of what do I spend time on, unfortunately, there's no clear answer where you should just go, okay, everyone go here. You know, authors, like anybody, it's not just authors. We all just want that. Can someone just give me the formula? Like, can someone just sell me the PDF guide that teaches me exactly what I need to do and what buttons I need to push for everything just to be successful and I sell millions of books. It doesn't work like that. It's different for every single person.
And it's got to be a long-term view, I think, as well, right? You know, everything takes a long time. You can't expect anything to work too quickly.
And that's the other problem, too, is that most authors want it right now, right? I like to say I'm an overnight 20-year success, right? I've been working on the internet for 20 years, right? And I've been able to build this business over 20 years, not overnight. It's taken a lot of time. The same thing with you, Joanna. You're selling more books. You're building this backlist. You're growing your business. Johnny and Sean from the Self-Publishing Podcast. Brian Cohen, Jay Thorne, right? These are people who are creating this long-term business from the work that they're doing now. And you're going to see these amazing things at the end of that tunnel. It's taking a lot of hard work and time to get there. It's building an author business.
Exactly. Over the long term. And yeah, this podcast is coming up to 5 years. I mean, I was early in podcasting. 2009, I started my podcast. But you have recently, like, double down on audio, starting what, two podcasts?
Yeah. So, you know, actually, I did a podcast years and years ago when YouTube came out called Video Ninjas. We were talking about YouTube and all that with my friend Steve. And so I did a podcast for a long time. The reason I went away from podcasts was I didn't think that the technology was currently there. It really wasn't working. You weren't able to reach that many people with it. But everything changed in the last couple of years because now everyone's got a smartphone and it's super easy to subscribe and listen to them while you're at the gym or on the bus or whatever. And the other thing that's created the podcast has made it so big is that cars now, you're Bluetooth right into your car and you could just play it from your phone or your tablet right in your car. So the technology has become so much better, which just allows people to pay attention. But podcasts are such an amazing way to connect with people. I will tell you this right now. Podcasts are my number one way to engage and build true fans right now because the audio and the video medium just allows you to connect with somebody on such a higher level than text on a page. It's unbelievable. I'm blown away by how many people come to me now through podcasts that I do or leave comments and email me and want to engage with me and talk to me based upon just writing blog posts. So if you haven't started a podcast yet, you really need to do it.
We've just added to everyone's list. What? But there are cases when starting a podcast, I mean, in my own experience of podcasting, I say that podcasting and Twitter, to be honest, are two of the best things for my business. They've been amazing for me. But it's, again, it's a long-term thing and you do have to upskill, don't you?
I mean, it's easy to start a podcast, in my opinion. I think you can get the sound going, get a good mic, and just create a podcast that people want to listen to. Again, back to the content marketing argument. You know, start a podcast that your readers want to listen to, right? Start a Facebook private group where your readers want to participate. If you write books about 17th century, set in 17th century China, right? Why don't you start a private Facebook group where you discuss things about that age? You're not in there just selling your book all the time, but you're talking about that period of time. People who are interested in that topic will love to be in that group and share photos and share articles and podcasts and be part of that. And then eventually they're going to go, well, Joanna writes books in that. She's got a book out. I should go buy that book. Same thing with a podcast. Start a podcast under that topic. Don't start a podcast about your book. Don't start a podcast about your author business, right? Start a podcast that connects with your potential readers.
Mm. And it's funny because, you know, obviously I moved into fiction several years after I started this podcast, several years after I started my blog. And so I've changed my focus. And people ask me, what would I do if I was starting again now? And it's actually really hard. You know, it's really hard to know. Would I podcast about dark fiction? I don't know, because I know Jay started one and kind of, you know, and that's, you're right, it's easy to start a podcast, it's hard to continue with a podcast.
Well, that's one of the keys to a podcast, is the consistency, right? You're making a promise to somebody when you create a new piece of content, and you're saying, I'm going to deliver this to you over a period of time. If the very popular podcast Serial did 5 podcasts and ended it, they would have broken the promise, right? And nobody would live. They'd be like, what the heck happened, right? So, you know, you're going to have to continue to do it over time. However, the ROI is there for you. If you can connect with your audience, you're going to build that legion of fans who really want to listen to you every single week. My other advice for you in creating a podcast is to keep it short, right? The attention span of people nowadays, and we've talked about this before, is just so low. And people want it now, instant, fast, delivered how they want it. And if you can't give it to them in that form that they want it, they're just not going to listen, they're not going to watch, or they're just going to go someplace else.
Mm. Or I would say keep it on topic. I mean, I frequently listen to podcasts that are 2 hours long.
It's long.
No, well, see, I love that. See, I love going deep on a topic with a person. So I listen to these long interview shows, but it's got to be on topic. So I think it can be long, but on topic, or short and to the point like yours is.
Okay. You know, I prefer ones that are quick hitters, right? That's just how I prefer things. And the people who work with me like those type of things. But, you know, hey, it works for everybody.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I am increasingly listening to more and more long form audio, which is, you know, really fascinating. So I think you're right, you connect in a different way because people hear your voice, and you know that it's more intimate. I think
people buy from people they know, like, and trust. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they come up with that quote. That's who is that, Rich Dad Poor Dad?
I think that was Chris Brogan in Trust Agents. No,
that's it's an old quote.
It's
from
before then.
Yeah, it's an old quote from somebody, I forget. But it's somebody else.
But it's true. Yeah, regardless. Absolutely. Regardless. Well, and in fact, you know, on that, I mean, that's why I like talking to you, because I've told you before, I read one of your books years ago when I was in Australia. But it was only when I kind of interviewed you and kind of got to know you by chatting that it, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm a real fan of Jim.
Well, you know, it's so important to have that FaceTime with people and to have that their personality in your ear. You know, just it's so important. And that's what gets people to want to be part of your true fan network, to you know, they will buy anything from you whenever you ask them to do it or do anything for you. And that's so important nowadays.
So just, you know, talking about the audio, you've just recently had the Author Marketing Live event, which was live, but across the internet, as opposed to live in person. So how did those two differ? And in terms of, because, you know, that physical networking you get at an event versus learning online.
Well, the first event we did was an in-person event, and those are great. And I still plan on doing those. Such a great way to network and meet people and build connections with people. I mean, it's even beyond what we're doing right here, physically shaking someone's hand or giving them a hug and having dinner with somebody or lunch is such an amazing way to build connections that can help your business, your career for life, right? Some of my best friends and business associates I have today come from going to shows and meet people and building relationships. So we did Author Marketing Live virtual simply from the fact that I found out a lot of writers couldn't get on a plane and travel and spend a lot of money. So we did this virtual event where you could just log in and watch the videos in a format like this and learn from people. We had presenters from all over the world, and we had people who came from all over the world to watch the videos and learn about the presentations. So there are two different things. And, you know, it worked out well for both of them. I was very happy.
No, it was great. And I mean, I totally agree with you. I think the physical networking events make a huge difference, and that we should, and in terms of a marketing budget, I actually think spending some marketing budget on going to conventions is a really important thing.
Actually, yeah. I mean, again, like I said, some of the connections I have been lifelong friends who have helped me create who I am today and the businesses I have today from those. So find an event that's right for you, whether it's for your genre or something. Find a way to get there, and don't sit in your hotel room. Go out, meet everybody, talk to everybody, have lunch with people, and build as many connections as you can. You're going to be blown away by how those connections are going to help you.
And I would say, like, one tip from an introvert like myself is, this is why Twitter's so good for me, because I make sure I contact people beforehand. Like, when I know I'm going to a convention, I will be on Twitter looking for mentions of people who are going. I'll follow them. I'll find the speakers. I'll get in touch. I will basically stalk people who are going to the conference, so that I can actually meet them and not be at a complete loss for words.
That's a great way to do it. Absolutely great way to do it. And, you know, if you're trying to reach out to an influencer, somebody who you respect and you want to meet, that's a great way to do it, as opposed to just walking up to them cold. Mm. Say, hey, look, I'm going to be here too. I would love to just say hello.
Yeah.
You know, here's a good tip for you. When you're at a show and you're trying to make a connection with somebody who is, a bigger person, that's very busy, or as a keynote speaker or something like that, or an influencer in the industry, the worst thing you can do is come up to them and say, hey, I need 10 minutes of your time, right? People like that don't have time. That's their biggest commodity, is time. You know, what you don't want to say is, I need you to give me your time, because they don't have it. But you want to just go up and say, hey, I want to thank you for everything you've done. This is really interesting what you're doing. I appreciate all that you're doing. And how can I help you? You know, Lewis Howes was on Author Marketing Live, and Lewis brought that point up. He said, you know, I don't approach people with a sales pitch. I approach people with, what can I do for you? And that's pretty much the exact same way that I go through with my businesses and everything I do. What can I do for you that can help you out? It comes back to you.
Yeah. And that's why having a podcast is great, right? Because, you know, we know that interviewing somebody and doing putting video, like most authors, for example, I think the skill of being able to record and edit a video and audio is a great skill for helping other people, which in turn gets you kind of favors in return. So it's amazing how many authors, like big name authors, do not have videos of themselves out there in the world.
Well, because a lot of them didn't have to. They're still either successful already, you know. But if you want to break through nowadays, it's very few people who have become successful just from writing the books and letting someone else do the marketing. Very few. If you look at every indie author's success story over the last 5 years, 99% of them are people who are doing and going the extra mile.
Yeah, and I wouldn't, there probably aren't even 99 of them, of the people who've gone big.
No, and it's a small window, absolutely.
It
right.
is a small window.
But the opportunity is there.
Yeah, just interested, just on that Author Marketing Live and you guys doing the show every week, I wondered if you see anything new in this whole space. Like you said, you've been doing this for 20 years and you're a marketing guy, and we both know, we hear the same things over and over and over again. Yeah. Do you see anything new in the space other than a new tool or whatever? But what is interesting to you right now?
Well, you know, I'm big on the micro books. I firmly believe that the future is in these devices, right? You know, everyone, I've said this before on multiple podcasts, this is the one thing that people have within an arm's reach almost 24 hours of the day.
This is a mobile phone, by the way, for the audio.
Phone, yeah. You know, when you get up, if you're at a job and you get up from your cubicle to go get a Snickers bar out of the machine, do you leave this on the desk? No, you put it right in your pocket, right? People put this right next to their head when they're sleeping at night, right? It's there. This is always there. And this is the thing that I think is going to change everything for authors. And my point is, do you want to read a 100,000 word book on that? I don't believe anyone wants to read a 100,000 word book on their phone. I believe that people want shorter, faster things that they can read, get through quickly. And this is just my personal opinion, okay? I still think that there will be people who will read longer things. But in the society that we live in nowadays, I think that people want fast. You know, it's the Netflix economy. I want it now. I want to watch it when I want to watch it, how I want to watch it. And I want to be able to hit the pause button and do it on the bus or on the or at the doctor's office or wherever it is I'm at. And if you're forcing me to consume it some other way where it's not convenient to me, I'm just not going to consume it.
Mm. No, I agree. I read mostly on my phone now, and I do read very long books. I don't actually see the container anymore. I don't see that. There's no difference to me reading on the phone or the Kindle device, because I only get the words. You know what I mean? So right. It's quite a different thing. But just on that, I mean, the moving. I just got interviewed just before we spoke by a teen. You know, by 18-year-old, and what was so funny was her incredulousness at the speed of traditional publishing. She could not believe that it might take 2 years or even 6 months to get a book out. And I just laughed and said, well, if you self-publish, it's about 4 hours. So,
yeah, you know, and again, back to the Netflix economy, right? The, yeah. The world that we live in now, especially millennials.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I saw a report that I read a year ago. I can't remember where it was from, but it said, you know, these people will pay more, millennials, mm-hmm. will pay a premium price for something as long as they can get it right now and how they want it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they have to wait for it, they're not going to pay for it. So you can charge more for something if you can give it to them how they want it, when they want it, mm-hmm. right? And that's the economy that people are turning into right now, which is, If I can't just get it right now, if I can't just get it easy and I can't get it in a second and consume it how I want to consume it, then frankly, I'm just not going to purchase it.
Yeah. So I guess my thought there is, I mean, we've seen the indie space really mature, in the last couple of years, really, it's become a lot more mature. That speed aspect, I mean, I don't think we'll see the death of big publishing in general, but are they going to have to compete on speed as well as price?
Yes.
To keep and up.
We're right in that in between, like, pre-teen age, I think, in terms of indie publishing, where we're at right now. We're not matured by any means, but we're not, you know, just learning how to walk either. Mm. We're right in the middle of that stage, between 7 and 13 years old right now, I would say. The technology is helping us get there faster. AuthorEarnings.com and Hugh Howey and those reports are helping us build the brand of indie publishing right there. And all the new businesses that are starting are helping us get there faster as well. At the same time, there's so much more competition coming in. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, people get so worried about that. You know, there's so much competition. If you're writing really good books and you're doing all the things you need to do, the upper percent of people who are serious about this and want to be successful will always break through, right? Over the people who are just trying to make a quick buck. Mm. Yeah. So the opportunity's there, and I think that's probably the best way that people can really think about that.
Mm. But I mean, you would you traditionally publish again?
The only way that I would ever traditionally publish again is if they gave me a huge signing bonus that I would be stupid to not take. But even then, you know, you're only getting a percentage of it up front. Then you have to earn out on it. And it just wouldn't make sense to me to do that at all. And I would go against everything I kind of believe in terms of the publishing industry and how it works right now. I just don't see any advantage for having a traditionally published book except for a signing bonus. I really don't.
Hmm. The thing is, you are a speaker and a consultant, so it would make more sense for someone like you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too, is if you do speak professionally, there are still event planners, people who book speakers, who still favor people who have traditionally published books. Hmm. Okay, so that might be the other reason why you might do it. But it really, the lines are blurring now. Mm-hmm. There was a report that came out that said people don't care who published the book anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't care. It's not a sales psychological reason why somebody chooses to click a buy button. People mm-hmm. just care if it was published from some big name publisher or somebody else. They just don't.
So what do you see as the next sort of frontier then? I feel like in the last year, we've kind of cracked audiobooks, like with ACX as audiobooks of... You know,
yeah, I don't think the audiobooks have cracked yet. Absolutely not, because it's still too hard to create them, too hard and too expensive. Okay. We have not reached the tipping point on audiobooks at all. Number one, ACX has not done anything really aggressive to offer discounted or free books, which is what made ebooks explode so big, because they allowed people to make free books, and then a bunch of websites like BookBub and other people started promoting those things. But ACX doesn't allow people to do any of that stuff. So no one's going to promote their stuff for free. So, and plus it's expensive to create an audiobook, right? It's a long, hard process. And it's just the law of the supply and demand. People aren't going to invest the time and effort into it, the mass adoption of people, until it's super lower cost and much easier to do. So I think we're still at the very beginning of the audiobook market. And I actually think it's going to overtake the ebook market down the road as soon as those things happen. The costs come down and it's easier to create. Now, somebody needs to invent, right? The next next wunderkind needs to come out and invent a way so that it's easy to create those audiobooks, right? With some kind of automated voice system where you could upload your script or your manuscript and choose a voice and it reads your book and it sounds like a real person. Can you imagine if that happened?
Well, that already has happened, because that's what people get when they have Kindle to read to them. And that apparently the voices now are very good. But what you don't get is the performance aspect of fiction. I agree probably for non-fiction, but for fiction, there's almost a, you know, there's a performance aspect.
Yeah, but it's a robot voice, you know. Imagine when you could choose 300 different voice or dialects, right, for your audiobook and upload a manuscript and it just made you an audiobook.
That would be awesome. So you think that will come? I guess there's no reason why it wouldn't. I mean, because we've seen in the last few months, right, the Skype Translate that will translate as you talk. You know, you'll be hearing it in German or whatever. That's cool.
You know, I hope it comes. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I knew the technology to make that happen, because whoever does that's going to be the next, you know, big business. But I do see that type of thing happening in the future if the technology gets there. Question is it going to be 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years, or 20 years? We just don't know. You know, as an author, you just kind of have to roll with the punches and go with what you can do at that current moment and do as much as you can. You alluded to this earlier, which is there's so much stuff. We just don't know what to do, mm-hmm. right? And that becomes the paralysis by analysis problem. When you start saying to yourself, well, I found out that there's 20 different things I have to do to be successful as an author. I can't figure out which one to do, so I'm just not going to do any of them. right? Or I want to do these ones, but I'm so worried I'm going to fail with these ones that I'm just not going to do those ones, right? Mm-hmm. You can't think like that. You have to just create a list, sit down, and try them. And the vast majority of them aren't going to work for you. But you may hit that one where you're like, holy crap, wow, that's the one that got me noticed by this publisher, by this agent, or by this up-and-coming website, or got me this, or the Today Show, or Oprah, or something. You never know, but you have to try.
Mm. So what else do you see then? If do you see anything else other than the audiobook? I mean, is print completely done? I mean, do you see a new innovation in print?
No, I still think that we need a better way to solve the side-loading problem. Side-loading is, you know, when you click that button on Amazon and buy the Kindle book, the magic book just flies through the air and appears on your device, right? And you can read it. Mm-hmm. Side-loading is when you have to, if you sell a book directly, how do you get that book from where you bought it directly, if it wasn't on Amazon, into the person's device to read it? And until we solve that problem and come up with another better way for authors to allow side loading to happen onto people's devices, we're going to be stuck with people like Amazon because they have to do that magic dust to sell it. So I think if some, again, just like the audiobook thing, if someone can solve that issue and make it real simple for people to side load a book on, I think they can open up a whole new world for authors selling direct to their audiences. An app is a way I thought might work in the future, again, but the apps are so difficult right now because it's so expensive to develop.
And so many devices.
So many devices, and every time you submit a change, you got to submit it to them. It's a whole big problem with the app market. So apps are always going to be here, but until that cost comes down and that technology comes down to a level where everyone can do it, it's not really a viable solution. I really do believe, going back to my micro book thread here, that serials and shorter works of fiction and nonfiction are going to play big time in the future. I really do believe this. Thinking like television shows, like Serials did this so very successfully, right? If you haven't listened to Serial yet, you should just go listen to the first episode just to see how well it's done. The problem with that is the stories are great, but they do such amazing editing with the music and
they had a whole team. I mean, that was
a whole team. So again, you and me, one person show, we're not going to go in and spend 40 hours editing a 10-minute episode. It's just not viable for us to do that. But I do think that when we can get to a point where we can create these shorter amounts of work in a serial format and say, oh, you know, cliffhangers, right? Here's what's going to happen in the next episode. Here's a great example for you. Have you ever played a game on your phone or your tablet like Candy Crush or Clash of Clans or any of those games?
I don't game.
Okay, well, you're not a gamer. But these companies are worth billions of dollars. And you know why they're worth billions of dollars? Because they let you play the game for free. Then if you want to upgrade or if you want a special sword or if you want a new tower, you click a button or if you want to skip a level. It says just 99 cents. We'll let you skip the level. Now, if you're sitting at an airport and you're reading a book and you get to the end of it and there's a great cliffhanger, and at the end of the book it says, well, you want to find out what happened to Sarah Jean? Click here, 99 cents. You get episodes 2, 3, and 4. You're going to be like, yeah, 99 cents, no problem. Let's go, right? Because you're being entertained. You don't care what you're paying for this entertainment. Right? It's an impulse purchase.
I actually think that it doesn't necessarily have to be a serial. It can be a series. So people are, people will want to buy, like I've just put out book 7 in my Arcane series, and people will buy all the rest of them.
But if you run the numbers, okay, let's think of this from a business perspective, right? Run the numbers. It's easier to get somebody to buy more often for shorter pieces, in my opinion, than it is to get somebody to buy a bigger piece that may have taken them six weeks to read, right? They may lose interest during that 6 weeks. They may just not get back to it, right? If I'm consuming content the way I know people are consuming content now, they want it fast and they just want to get to the next one. I mean, there's a reason those games are worth billions of dollars, because you're sitting there, you're being entertained, and you click a button and says, well, I want to keep being entertained. I'll pay $1.99 or I'll spend $4.99. It's fake money because it's my phone, right? I'm hitting a little button. And it just somehow I'm paying that money through my Apple Pay or PayPal or whatever it is. Hmm. I think that same psychological effect will happen with authors who take that route with books.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's going to be a big thing.
Yeah, definitely. And we're seeing some of that now. And maybe the failure of Kindle serials was just an early failure, and it will come back.
I do think it will come back. It's just a matter of thinking more like a gaming company.
Yeah, and I agree that gaming is a massive part. And I've got a gaming guy coming on the show to talk about this, because I really think like Oculus Rift and the gaming companies is very interesting, certainly for fiction authors.
Yeah, it is interesting, and there's a lot of parallels in what gaming is doing. And somebody needs to develop a really cool way for authors to do the same type of thing. Mm. Once you do that, I think you can open up a whole new world for authors.
Fantastic. Okay, so where can people find you and AMC online?
So authormarketinginstitute.com is the best place to go, because you're going to find out where the events are, the academy courses, the club, the podcast, all of the things are listed there. Just go to authormarketinginstitute.com.
And the sellmorebookshow.com.
Yes, too. sellmorebookshow.com as well. We do a weekly show there, me and Brian. And it's every Wednesday we post up a new episode, so you can listen to that as well.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time, Jim.
Hey, it's great to be here, Joanna. Thanks for having me on again, and I can't wait to see you in person at an event, hopefully soon.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.